Looking for the simpler side of Scott Johnson? Look no further than Diary of a Cartoonist, a podcast available now for you to listen to. Go to frogpants.com/diary today.
I have
current geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek episode 18. And this is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you. It's Gavel McLeod making his triumphant return after a week off. To keep you current on all the things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson, and that guy is Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
I don't know if it was just a little triskaidekaphobia on your part, Scott, but it's episode 13.
Why did I say, because there's an 18 up here. Why is that in there? Here, I'll fix it.
Get rid of that.
That's 13.
I thought you were just afraid to say 13.
No. But I did go. I meant to tell you this. I was in a hotel a couple of weeks ago.
That's great news. Oh, there's more to the
story.
And
we were on the 10th floor. But at one point, we were going up to the top because we wanted to see the view from up there. They had a little thing you could walk out on and stuff. Real nice hotel. We go up there. Somebody stopped us on a 13th floor.
Whoa.
Yep. Doors opened. Big family, a couple of kids rolled into the thing, and I went, ooh. Uh-huh. That was the sound I made. And I think those people thought I was weird. But anyway, it freaked me out because I thought
when you got to the top of to your floor, yeah. They weren't there anymore.
They weren't there anymore. I'm telling you, man, it's haunted. Welcome back to the show. We're happy to be here, and we're happy to welcome guests, the returning guests. Let's start with him. We have one Stephen Schleicher, purveyor of all things major spoilers. Stephen, welcome back to the show.
Hail Hydra.
Oh, you've done that twice to me this week. Three times. TMS, Comic Dorks, and LS.
My wife went over to one of our dogs yesterday morning and just whispered that in their ear.
Oh. Like,
no.
Did you get a picture of it or something?
I should have.
That seems to be the meme. Also joining us, someone who will not be a stranger. If you listen to a lot of the shows on the network and you've heard things various over the years, especially TMS and our Star Trek trivia segment, then you know this guy. It's Daryl Skeels, everybody. Hi, Daryl.
Hello.
His first time on the...
His last name is the Trek Nerd.
Yeah, oh, right? I'm sorry. Daryl the Trek Nerd. The Trek Nerd, all one word. Yeah, it's pronounced...
It's sweet.
Yeah. The Nerd is how you say it, but we're just going to do it the way we think. Daryl, it's good to have you here. Thanks for being on.
Oh, it's great to be here.
No problem.
I have been here before.
Not on here proper.
Well, no, not on this latest one, but remember way back in the very beginning on the very first episode way long time ago
of what forecast or what of Current Geek Weekly.
Oh shoot, you're right. I think it was no I was on forecast but no, it was Current Geek.
I don't know what it was. It
I was the very first guest on the very first show way back.
Is that true? I don't remember this. I don't remember that. Do you remember?
I talked about I built a set in my living room when my parents were gone and filmed the Star Trek movie.
Kind of. Well, let me just say that it sounds like something
that
you would tell us.
That was when we were on the Dumont Network.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. In the 40s.
All right. Well, it's good to have you both here. It's a thrill as always. Let's get straight into the quick stuff at the top of the show.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
Every time you play that, I just imagine little babies sitting around listening to it. It cheers me up. I think it's a good thing. X-Men Days of Future Past had its final trailer released, and every mutant you can think of is in this thing. Did you watch it?
And actor. Yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like...
Yeah. Well, I said mutant actor. It's kind of redundant.
Sure. I was actually a little bit surprised to see Kitty Pryde in there again. I can't think of her name all of a sudden, the actress. The one from Juno. Oh, yeah. Juno lady. Yep. Anyway, she's in it, and that surprised me. But I noticed, I don't know, Steven, if you were noticing this, but no Angel.
Nope, no Angel, but Bishop is in there.
Oh, Bishop's in there?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
It's so chock full and it moves pretty quickly. I wonder if there's plenty that we didn't see that are still going
to
show up.
Oh, I'm going to bet so.
Could be. 310 to Yuma had that actor in it that played Angel, and I still can't think of the guy's name. Something about Friday Afternoons kills all my...
You can think of 310 to Yuma, but you can't remember his name.
I can't. I just remember he was the crazy bad guy.
That is a sad state of affairs for that poor actor.
Russell Crowe's right-hand man. He's great. He's awesome. I love him and everything.
Sorry,
I see him
sir.
In.
Your name is less memorable than 310 to Yuma.
but whatever his name is, he was the original... In Last Stand, he played Angel, and he's not in this. But, you know, seeing what's her name come back as Kitty Pryde from Last Stand. I mean, obviously, apparently Bryan Singer doesn't hate Last Stand so much that he's not willing to pull some of the same actors who played those roles out. Ben Foster, that's it.
Okay, good.
It's Australian for beer. So, Stephen, what do you think of the? I mean, you're our kind of resident comic book giant nerd here. Where how do you feel about this movie moving forward with this revelation that we're getting so much more in there than we maybe knew before?
So they had the part that came up about a week or two ago where it had the X-Men fighting the Sentinels, that little clip. And when I saw that, I was like, I'm not really sure about this. But after seeing this trailer, I'm very excited to see this movie. And it is very, very clear that this is not a direct copy of the comic book.
Mm.
This is going to be a whole new story using that as the idea and the theme. Yeah. But it pretty much ends there.
Daryl, where are you on X-Men fandom? You like them?
I like them. I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but it's good stuff.
You got Picard in there and your big Star Trek guy.
Yeah. He's great in everything.
Yeah, he pretty much is. Yeah, I wonder though,
Picard.
And I see this on the surface, Tom, and I wonder actually how much we're actually going to get of Patrick Stewart. I have a feeling that him and Ian McKellen are less in it than we think.
I would hope so. Not in that I don't want to see them, because I absolutely do want to see them. I love seeing those two interact, but because this is Days of Future Past, I would expect that we want to spend a lot of time in the past.
Sure.
Right. They're going to be there, first 20 minutes probably.
Yeah. Well,
your action is going to happen in the past. I mean, that's where the big stuff happens. Not everybody can be Hugh Jackman and sort of work both ends of the deal.
Right. Right.
And look good doing it. But
and sing.
He does sing. You saw that thing he did this week? That was great.
Yeah.
His weird Broadway X-Men Wolverine thing.
Yeah, Broadway Wolverine.
It was awesome.
Wolverine.
How cool is that? Anyway, it's very exciting. Trailer looks great. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's on the internet.
Let us talk then about our subreddit. We do have one. If you are thinking, why didn't they talk about this on Current Geek? I will tell you why. Because you, my friend, did not submit it to our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com like ZBeebs did. ZBeebs submitted the link on the subreddit to the Hearthstone for iPad arriving.
Oh, man.
Which means I'm not going to talk the rest of the episode because I'm going to now launch Hearthstone for iPad.
It's we said this on TFS earlier tonight, our video game show. And I'll say it again, and I'm sure others have said it, but it is the enemy of sleep, that game. And if you have it now on a device that is very convenient to have with you while you're trying to sit up in bed and nod off, it's getting late, but you fire that thing up, you're screwed. You'll play all night. And it's doing really well. Something like 35 countries now, the record holder for most apps downloaded in a day ever. Big deal for them. They suspect they're going to, or the estimated revenue for that game this year is $39 million in revenue, which is huge for that small team.
For a free game?
Yeah, for a free game. So this is all just card packs and money to get into arenas.
Yep.
All that stuff. Anybody else playing? Tom and I know are playing. How about you two? You guys dabbling at all?
I'm playing right now.
Oh, good.
I can tell.
I've been waiting for this to come on the iPad because I rarely have, in my free time, I'm not sitting in front of the computer, but I will have the iPad available. So I can just grab this, open it up, start playing. Time to go to town.
Yeah, it's good, right? A quick game, get in, get out.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. Short, sweet, get in, get out. I don't have to worry about candy crushing or anything like that.
Oh, that's true. Daryl, are you playing it?
You can see no iPad here.
Oh, you have no iPad. Oh, I see you now. You're on video.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see you before. You're in a very smart golf shirt. I like that. I don't know why I'm saying that. So that's great. You should
wait a minute.
It.
He's wearing a red shirt.
Oh, what?
So are you, Schleicher.
Yeah, what's going on?
Oh.
Only Tom
means
and
we're
I.
We're not going to return next episode.
Yeah, Tom and I survived this away mission. Oh, no. Nice. I was going to say one more thing about Hearthstone, and I forgot.
Well, I'll tell you what. One thing I was surprised is how good even the things like card management work. Because the one thing I was excited about, this may seem a little silly, is being able to pull up decks on my laptop to look at, like websites that list deck layouts.
Sure.
And then trying to figure out how to modify them, because I don't have that many cards, has been a pain. Because when you do it on the tablet, like half those sites have Flash or something that doesn't translate, or some JavaScript that doesn't work. So now I was like, okay, well, I'll try running Hearthstone on the tablet while I look at the decks on my laptop, and it works great.
Yep.
The deck management is fantastic on the tablet.
And it's kind of the way you have to do it, to do, you know, to well, what I mean by have to do it, if you want to play this game well, you want to spend a lot of time paying attention to how to build your decks. Even if you have limited cards, you know, what are people doing with those cards?
So that if you're playing constructed, Scott?
Yes, and if you're competing well at all, because my problem is I suck at this game, and I always have, and I probably always will. And I've had, I don't know, since it came out, 8 days or 8 games or so that I've played or had time to play. And of all those, I have won none of them.
Well, you just need to listen to the Angry Chicken a little more. That's all.
Is that it?
Okay. Start learning about the metagame and the constructed and these words that I've heard them say that I barely understand, but I can pretend like I really know things now.
Garrett and Dills will be proud. I know what I was going to say. This was this. I don't want people to say, oh, you American-centric podcasters with your tunnel vision about when things come out. Yes, we are aware that a good 2 weeks before this, the New Zealand store, the Canada store, and a few other stores got a hold of Hearthstone before we did. We know. But now it's here. The market they were most worried about, the reason they held off.
It's everywhere, too, right?
It's everywhere now.
It didn't launch just in the U.S. It launched everywhere else that they're going to launch it.
The rest of the world got it. It's now an official international launch, and people always wonder why. And the reason was, it's simple. Well, I have some inside info, but I would have also guessed this, that they needed to roll it out so that they could, you know, stress test servers and make sure they were ready. So when you're going to do it in their biggest potential market, which is the U.S., you've got to be ready for that. And I think they weren't exactly. I think they still had some stuff to do with servers and stuff before they did. That's how Blizzard works. They're not going to do it and have a giant broken day. That would have been real bad PR. And they nailed it. No problem so far. It's working great. So go
Canada,
play it.
Yeah, a nation of beta testers.
Sorry, we got it early. Sorry.
Beta testers to the world. Hey, you know, we've seen Star Trek captains cross over into each other's stories lots of times. We've seen multiple doctors from Doctor Who cross over into each other's stories a lot. But now we get to see all the Star Trek doctors in one story.
What is this in? A comic?
It's a comic. Star Trek special Flesh and Stone coming this July. Scott and David Tipton author it. It takes place at Starfleet Medical Conference, which is crashed by a deadly metamorphic virus. And you're going to get the emergency medical hologram, Drs. Beverly Crusher, Julian Bashir, Catherine Pulaski, and a little bit of Leonard McCoy and Dr. Phlox as well.
Ooh, Phlox, of course, from Enterprise, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Daryl, come on, man. Resident Trek man, how do you feel? I mean, there was another crossover we didn't mention in this intro, which is the Doctor Who Next Generation crossover.
Oh, right. Good point. Yeah.
There's a weird way to do that. But this thing, all doctors all the time, it seems like a fan fiction dream going on, Daryl. What do you think, man? Excited?
Oh, I don't know if I like that. That's just weirdness.
Yeah. Why? Like, what? Tell me what could go wrong. How could this be a bad thing?
I don't know. It just sounds just crazy. It just sounds, I don't know. I don't even know. It just slaps me in the face and sounds bad.
Does it sound like contrived to you? Like, hey, here's a gimmick, get all the doctors together.
Yeah, it just sounds gimmicky, like something made up to sell comics or something.
Now, Steven.
I read about this on MajorSpoilers.com. So, Steve.
Yeah, what's your take on crappy gimmicks in comics?
We've seen some of these doctors meet before in the original series and Deep Space Nine and so on. So it's not too far of a stretch to imagine that these well-known doctors are going to head to a medical conference somewhere and hilarity ensues. Mm. Also, House in Space.
Right. Right, but so
that's Catherine Pulaski. She's totally House.
Yeah, she's House for sure. So what's the difference between somebody saying, hey, we're going to put all the doctors at a conference at Federation headquarters and have everything go awry, or if I came out and said, there's a technology or an anomaly in space that suddenly resurrected all the red shirts who have perished throughout the history of the show. And they're all back together and they've got to fight as one last time. That's just as dumb, isn't it? Like it's,
but that's dumb in a great way.
Yeah, I'd watch that, wouldn't you? Or read that? I would totally read that. Borg.
The doctors are somebody's favorites, right?
Yeah, well, I'd love the doctors.
Even Beverly Crusher, Scott?
No, not so much Beverly Crusher. She's too Skeletor-like. But you know who I really like is I like the hologram. What's his name? Picardo. Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. And I actually like Phlox a lot. And whatever, they're all good. If you really wanted to know my least favorite doctor, I think it's Bashir. But whatever, they all kind of have their place. They're an important kind of hallmark archetype in the Star Trek mythos. And putting them all together I'll read this comic. How about that? We'll report about it on Current Geek. Tell people if it's any good. and we'll check it out. It's fine. But I'm telling you, that red shirt idea has got some guns. I'm telling you.
I am both with and against Daryl on this one. Like, my initial reaction is, ooh, this is cool. I want to see all these crossovers from the different series because I love that stuff. And maybe that's a matter of taste. But then I steer immediately into Daryl land. And I'm like, yeah, but they're probably going to not make it very good, right? They're just, it's like, that's all they had was the concept, and we'll see where they go.
Yeah.
Tiptons have written good stuff before, though.
Yeah, so I want to say they did the Star Trek versus Star Trek meets the Legion of Superheroes one, I think. Mm. I think they did that one, too. And it was really pretty good.
Who has the rights to all the stuff? It's not IDW.
IDW Publishing is doing this, yes. Right.
Well, they've been doing good stuff lately, so.
How about this one, Daryl? Star Trek number 35, which is covering the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek world, is going to have Q show up because the Q continuum exists outside of any alternate timelines. So he's aware of the alternate timeline.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw that. I think I'm open to that. It sounds a lot better than all the doctors getting together. Although I thought...
The way you say it, it makes it sound like they're just going to have lunch.
And that'll right, be- right. They're just hanging out. I love it. But hold on now, Daryl. Q, we've talked before on TMS during your segment about how we're a little queued out sometimes. Like you get to be a bit much and you always know if there's a new series.
Queued overload,
right? We're like, he'll just show up in Voyager for no reason, you know, and whatever. Like it feels like John Delancey's contract was, hey, we may call you, just be ready, be by the phone. And they'll bring him in, and it'll be all throwback to Next Gen. Oh, remember when Q was on all the time? This feels like a little bit of that. But I like this in comic universe stuff because this is kind of a what-if space for people to do some really creative stories. So I don't have a problem with this at all. I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's kind of a mad experiment. Just what would happen if this happened?
Yeah, and why not? Right?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. What was I going to ask you? Now I forgot. IDW, though. Way to go, man, with your weird ideas. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah. Cool stuff there coming up. All right. Project Tango, you may have heard of. It's Google's prototype mobile 3D mapping technology. It's kind of meant to work in smartphones with multiple cameras, and it can see and map the world around you. There's also something from NASA called SPHERES, which stands for Synchronized Position Hold Engage Reorient Experimental Satellites, which is a way of them going, we wanted to call it SPHERES. So he came up with a bunch of words, but it's a floating robot, for goodness sake. So it's really cool. They're putting robots into orbit this summer as proofs of concept that could eventually lead to sophisticated autonomous helpers aboard the ISS that are going to have Project Tango built into them. And in fact, Google posted a video of a test flight where it took Project Tango-enabled spheres on a zero-gravity simulation flight, one of the vomit comets, you know, to see how the 3D environment sensors and the other systems worked. And they actually had zero G.
Well, practical use, what's the point in your mind? Like, do they go into that?
They're going to assist with things on the ISS. They're going to be able to, like, do monitoring and simple tasks and stuff like that. So there's a real practical use for them.
All right, cool.
Does Tango have Asimov's three laws programmed in?
I read a very interesting article recently that Asimov's three laws are bad ideas.
Oh, really?
They're totally impractical for robotics.
I think I did read see a similar headline about
that. What's the gist of that? I would like to hear that, too. Why are the laws broken?
Oh, I'd have to go back and read it again. But they're basically like, they don't work very well because they require too much nuance. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're just not good programming, if I recall correctly.
Well, and if I remember in the stories, part of the reasons why the robots were breaking down was because of the conflicts in the three laws and trying to understand what was going on.
Well, yeah, iRobot really is all about that,
plot
right?
Device.
Yeah.
I mean, even the movie I know is a far more watered down version of that story. But,
right.
Even that, those were the themes that there's this conflict immediately of, wait a minute, this doesn't exactly work. The rock, paper, scissors doesn't work today. Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. Daryl, this is the dawn of technology that will one day become Star Trek. I actually want to talk about that real quick. This idea that the Star Trek world and the Star Trek future and universe is this utopian ideal for human beings to get to. We always talk about it. It's forward thinking and exploratory and all these fantastic things happen. And man, why aren't we going to be great and benevolent people and blah, blah, blah. But it seems to me that if you really broke it down, a world without money, currency, or any of those things that they sort of put forth, at least up to next gen, seem like that stuff would make everything break down. It wouldn't actually work. You're missing all the motivating factors. So I just wanted to real quick just throw it at you, Daryl, because we've never talked about this. Do you really believe, as a guy who loves Star Trek and has it as a cornerstone of your cultural being, do you believe that the future really can be the way they show it?
Well, I think we can strive to get there. We may never get quite to that ideal society, but I think it's a great thing to try to get to it.
So
and if we can get partway there, then that's a great thing.
So in your mind, it's not so much about did we succeed and have replicators and no one needs money and all we do is explore and help people and follow the prime directive, or not follow it, I guess, if you actually watch the show. It's not so much about that, but it's about the effort to obtain those things, even if we never quite reach them. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, you changed my life today.
On the three laws of those robots, that not following them, you need to be able, you need, if in case Kirk gets up there or William Shatner, you need to be able to talk them to death. And yes. You can't do that.
Everything I say is true.
It says don't harm. Was a lie. But what does harm mean?
Hey.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
If I'm a sadist, what do you do then? That's actually, I just looked up the article on IO9, and that's essentially one of the problems with the three laws is that they are a rule-abiding system of ethics. Mm-hmm. They call it deontology, and those are fairly discredited in philosophy. They're like, ethics has to be judged in more nebulous ways. You can't just say rule one, rule two, rule three. And the other thing is the sort of vagueness and the open to interpretation of the rules.
Right.
Like what is harm in a particular
case? Sure. And in a particular time, right? Cause I could, you know, I could roll around in the '40s and say, man, if I could just get a gun and shoot a Jap, that sounds like a normal thing to say. You say it today and it sounds horrible. You know what I mean? So
right.
Why?
Well,
so the same,
there's also, they bring up the idea that robots under the three laws are essentially like second-class citizens and subservient. And if AI mm-hmm. gets to a certain level, they should probably just be able to decide for themselves what to do.
Yeah. I love that stuff. I love the whole argument of it. I don't have any answers, though.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, Tonda Go said that was not the best Kirk impression. It wasn't meant to be.
It was. What is Shatner? What do you think?
Hey.
All right, fine. He approves. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it.
Shall we go on to Mike P. Kennedy's story?
Ooh, yeah.
He submitted to the subreddit as well. Twin towers for a Middle Eastern-based media headquarters. They're not saying who, though. They're keeping it secret. Will have enormous retractable sunshades within the structure, which overlap to create a 700-foot-tall wide curtain shielding workers from direct sunlight. It was designed by a New York architectural firm called Rex. The shades resemble 12-sided umbrellas with concave edges and a light curve to their spines. And if that weren't enough, LEDs will be integrated into the sunshades, which can be centrally controlled to form a giant television screen across both buildings so they can broadcast the company's content to the entire city.
Wow. I don't know if I should be afraid or completely blown away by how cool this is. It seems a little scary, and I don't know how much it costs, but it sounds expensive. I don't have much of an opinion other than that. But
yes, Scott, I shudder to think about what could happen with these giant umbrellas.
That building's going to Mary Poppins, isn't it?
You know what I mean, though.
Actually, if you look at the design from the architectural standpoint, from the aesthetic standpoint, beautiful.
Yeah, it's really
this
pretty.
Is wonderful, and you know, especially if heating and cooling are a big issue, this takes care of a lot of that problem. If you can just pop that up, still let a little light through, but not the heat of the day, this is great. Now, I don't know about the LED broadcast because that could get a little creepy.
Two things.
A little Big Brother.
Two things. They look like suction cups. And so that effect makes it look just kind of weird. Like it doesn't look like a building. This looks like some kind of strange, art project. And secondly, there are not enough mountains where these people live. Just pushing that out there as a little piece of information. Look at that. It is terrible.
You can project the pictures of mountains on the inside.
Yes. See? Who needs mountains when you got 1,000 Mary Poppins staring down at you at once?
Wow. Are you kind of a mountain egotist?
I am. I have to admit.
Because I grew up without mountains, dude.
I know. How did you stand it? How could you live without
mountains?
We didn't mountains?
Know. We just didn't even know.
But now I know. So when I go to like Kansas and I'm driving through that ridiculously long,
godforsaken
drive.
Place.
Yeah. I just see nothing but fields.
Chauvinists.
I go to the south. I go to Mississippi and it's just green trees forever and there's nothing holding it in. I can't do it.
Anyway. I've got two sets of mountains, so there.
Yeah, you do.
Well, so now I've got mountains that I can sometimes see when the smog clears and an ocean.
See?
So, how do you live without an ocean? Oh, I've got a salt lake. It's not the same thing.
Okay, fine.
I got you all beat. I can see the curvature of the earth.
Yeah, can you? That's right.
It's so flat.
All right. Well, that takes care of... Oh, no, we got one more here. What's this
one? Oh, no, we got this. Last story was brought up by Stephen right before the show. British Path, the UK newsreel archive company, has uploaded its entire 100-year collection, 85,000 historic films in high resolution to YouTube. We were having fun looking at this before the show.
Yeah. This is really cool, and I'm going to go on a spree and just record a bunch of stuff because... there is something about that era, the sound of that time. And I know some of these are even newer. There's some stuff in the 70s, which apparently there were still newsreels in the 70s. But there's, you know, this kind of era between, let's say, 40 and 50. Give me that decade's worth of the way people talked and the way they presented themselves on film and in newsreels and stuff. Some of my favorite things in the world. And so I'm going to have a heyday in here. But, you know, from a historical perspective, this is pretty cool to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, this goes from 1896 to 1976 is where the collection spans part of it. And then they've put it all online for people to check out. So if you want to see World War One footage, World War Two footage, you want to see Fidel
Spanish
Castro.
Or
maybe. Yeah.
Six.
Yeah. It's supposedly there in high definition over on YouTube. And yeah, we were playing around with that a little bit earlier.
And millions and millions and millions of views so far on some of these individual videos. It's clearly hitting a chord. People want this stuff. So yeah, it's really, really, really cool. I wonder if we're holding on to a bunch of the stuff that we ought to put up there here in the States, or is it all up there already? It may be. I don't know. I have no idea.
Some of it's on archive.org for sure. Yeah. I've seen a bunch of newsreel stuff, but I don't know if it's all held in one central location like British Path.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Good stuff, everybody. Go check it out. Enjoy yourselves. Now here's a piece of some of that. Whoops. I'm in the wrong place. Here's a piece of some of that right now.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Yep, I have. Here is the here is the main topics of the day. We've talked a little bit about the Windows Phone Cortana thing based on the Halo character.
It was kind of the big news in technology this week. Windows Phone 8.1 coming out.
Yeah. So thoughts, Tom? Where was this thing at? How's it looking?
Well, I was curious how you guys feel about the Cortana thing, particularly because A, it's got the Halo reference there. But also by all accounts, and I haven't used it myself, it is kind of right there between Google Now and Siri. Like it's got a little bit, because it's powered by Bing, it's got a little bit of that predictive power of Google Now, but it's not been around as long, so it's not quite as sophisticated yet. But it can do things like tell you when your flight is and whether traffic's busy on your way home. You also get a lot more control over telling it, these are the things I want you to track and know about. And because the email is done on the app, it can do any of your email that's going through the app on the phone. And learn a lot of stuff. But then it's also voice activated like Siri. So you can talk to it and it's got a personality. And there was that great Arsenio Hall video this week of Cortana and Siri having an argument with each other. Yeah. So, you know, I feel like this is the kind of thing that could put Windows Phone back in the game here in the U.S. It's above 10% in a bunch of markets around the world, but it's still having a hard time grabbing hold here in the U.S.
Anybody use a Windows Phone here, Daryl or Steven? Either of you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
I know my mom does. She uses one. She really likes it. But she has no idea that this is coming out. Probably doesn't have a phone that'll even upgrade. I don't know. It's pretty old. It's very early sort of generation, first gen Windows phone.
Yeah, might not.
Yeah, with the new Metro stuff anyway. But she and others I've talked to really, really do like the interface. I feel like they are making inroads. It's more on Microsoft at this point to see it through and try to push themselves into a place that's a better place for them to be rather than say, we're third place. We give up kind of attitude, but I'm all for voice tech getting better and better. And we've seen things come along here lately that seem to be pushing in that direction. Unfortunately, the new Kinect stuff on Xbox One is not great. Would be really cool if this Cortana stuff made its way to Xbox One and that improved that experience.
I guess I had really low expectations because I feel like the Xbox One voice recognition is better than I expected it to be.
I mean, what's your experience like? Do you find like it's not getting some of your stuff, but getting most of what you're asking correct? And
you have to learn the tempo at which to speak, and then it works very functionally. You can't just talk to it though.
But to me, it's like all these companies are slow. They all want to get on this bandwagon of let's have cool voice controlled stuff. And maybe Google's doing it the most widespread in terms of the different places it can be used and how it can be used. And it's even available on other people's platforms like iOS. I can use a lot of that technology already in Google Apps on that platform. But it seems like they're also slow to integrate it into into products that would actually benefit from this, like Apple TV. It's ridiculous that a version of Apple TV that I could go purchase right now in the Apple Store doesn't have Siri technology built into that thing. Why is that not letting me voice search for stuff?
Like, it's a hobby.
It's weird. Yeah, I guess. I mean, they can keep leaning on that excuse, I suppose. But, you know, it'd be cool and I think beneficial for Microsoft specifically to grow in the phone market if they said, well, this stuff's so awesome. If Cortana's this impressive, let's put it into other products that people care about. Windows proper, our Xbox and gaming experiences, all that kind of stuff. The Surface stuff, Surface Pro would be cool. It's kind of voice technology. And then, you know, then they've got kind of a leg up. Then they got a reason for people to go, this seems all right. But for me, just good voice on a phone is not enough for me to make the switch. There's a bunch of factors in it for me.
What if it started calling you Master Chief?
I think I'd be down with that, Steven.
It does. It does do that.
I'm a tall guy. Yeah, I'm a tall guy, but I'm not quite that tall. I'm 7'5", but I'd still feel pretty good about it. I mean, the funny thing is that they tied it. In some ways, this is good because a whole generation of gamers is like, yeah, dude, Cortana, Halo, I get it. But then there's got to be a bunch of people who are like, why are you naming it after a video game character? That seems kind of unprofessional.
I don't know if those people will know to know it's named after a video. Like, if you know it's named after a video game character, you're likely to think it's cool. Otherwise, you wouldn't recognize and you'd just be like, what's with these weird names like Siri and Cortana? Yeah.
Are they advertising it yet? I don't think
Google
they are.
Google Now.
Yeah.
No, because it's the developer's preview that came out. You can get it and put it on your phone, but it's not available just to anybody yet.
Daryl, it's the computer in the enterprise, man. That's the time we're living in. You realize that, right?
Yeah, everything's going that direction. It'll only get better.
Yeah, I think Trek could take some credit for that. Forget your 4K TV, all right? That one you just bought, Steven, take it back.
Okay.
Get your $9,000 back because 8K broadcasts are coming by 2020. Why are we even bothering with 4K, Tom? What's the point?
Well, for those who actually follow this stuff, there's a bunch of qualifications here. At NAB and the NHK, set up a transmission and reception antenna at both ends of its booth. It's the first time anywhere in the world outside of Japan that wireless transmission of 8K super high vision has been demonstrated over a single 6 megahertz TV channel. When I was looking into this, I found out they did a broadcast last year, but it wasn't over a single 6 megahertz TV channel. But they did 60 frames per second, 8K onto a 350-inch diagonal screen, 22.2 multi-channel sound, and they're saying, look, 8K is as much resolution as the human eye can possibly see in any situation. So once we get to 8K, we're good. We've maxed out resolution for everything. Of course, it has to be a really big screen to make a difference, which I guess we're all going to just get massive screens there. But Steven, you had a friend who actually saw this.
One of my coworkers, were building a new building and a media facility, and we're stocking it up. So I sent him out there again to do a final check to make sure that what we were going to upgrade to is what we were going to upgrade to. And we were thinking 4K, 4K, 4K. He came back and couldn't stop talking about 8K. I know, I told him we can't afford it. He said the footage that they were showing, it's like they had some soccer game footage. And with the 22.1 surround or whatever it is, 22.2 surround sound, it sounded like you were sitting right there in the seat where they recorded it. And you were looking at a picture that you would swear that you were looking at out a window into the stadium itself. He said it was so fantastic to look at. It was so brilliant that it just blew his mind away.
So maybe that's the jump. The 8K is the right jump because that's one of the big problems with 4K. I keep seeing 4K screenshots for video games and I kind of don't think it looks that much better than a 1080p display. So maybe 8K is the way I do feel like I'm getting a window into whatever world I'm looking at.
And with televisions getting larger and larger, you know, these 108-inch, 150-inch screens.
Yeah.
That's where 8K would probably start to really show. But Tom's right. You're not going to see that on your 27-inch iMac. 8K is not going to be any different than a 1080p or a 2K shot.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, let's just skip them. Let's just go straight to 8K. That's what I'm saying. That's
BBC was saying that during the London Olympics, they did an 8K broadcast and they were telling people, in fact, Sharif Sark from Engadget agreed. He's like, forget it. Forget 4K. We don't even need it. It's not that much better than 1080. And 8K is here. You can actually do it. Why waste money other than like trying to sell people a bunch of TVs that you can then get them to get rid of and get an 8K TV later?
Yeah.
And why bother? If this can come by 2020, I can deal with 1080p till then.
I think you just said it, though. I think that's
well, I think the interesting thing with 4K, and this was another presentation that my coworker went to. He went to a CBS presentation where they were showing instant replay for NFL football. And what they're doing is they're shooting the games in 4K for instant replay. And then because they have so much space that they can work with to broadcast out into the 1080i or the 1080p, they can zoom into those areas of contested calls and really get a lot more detail out of that.
Yeah,
so there is kind of a reason for keeping the 4K around, at least for broadcast on the broadcast side of
it. They can zoom in even farther with 8K.
Yeah, they will with 8K. That's going to be, I mean, you'll be able to see if the shoelace is in bounds or not.
See, that's crazy because think about it. We are actually going to get a technology that would be possible that we used to make fun of in movies where they would say zoom and enhance, right?
Yeah, enhance.
Yeah, and they would do this ridiculous thing where they could zoom in and do that. Now there's actually some credit to the idea of doing
that. And with Cortana, you'll be able to just say zoom and enhance.
Yeah. And she'll go.
And it'll do it.
Shut up, Master Chief.
Is there going to be bandwidth to be able to transmit more than one channel of this?
Well, if you're talking over the air, then yes, because if this is true about the 6 megahertz TV channel, right, Tom? I mean, that means
big things. Do you mean right now in our home connections,
no,
Daryl?
Hell no.
Well, yeah, or what is it going to take to get us there?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take more bandwidth, no doubt. And so that is a gating factor. But I remember when HD TVs were out in 2001, 2002, and people were like, you'll never be able to download HD video. And of course we do now, because now we can get 25 megabits per second, which was unthinkable in a home in 2002.
So you think it's about a decade is the kind of timeline?
That's what NHK is predicting.
They're going to start broadcasting in 2020. So a decade before it becomes even a modicum of widespread.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, by the time I'm 80, they should have all this worked out.
I wonder. I mean, we don't have to worry about regulations. I mean, that's the reason why we were so delayed in getting HD. We could have had HD video in the 80s, but regulations and spectrum errors were just holding it back until we basically jumped over into the digital broadcast and didn't have to worry about that. I wonder if we're going to have to wait, an extra 30 years before it arrives in America and is in wide use in America.
Well, there's another factor in there is how people are going to be getting their television signals, right?
That's true.
Are we going to continue to get them over the air by 2020?
I would bet not.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
You got to think about us in Western Kansas where, we don't have very much high speed internet, or connections. And we've got gig fiber to the home right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, cable providers, satellite, that's going to be rough.
All that stuff would have to catch up, change, be something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shake out.
Right. Poor PBS.
what you're telling me, Stephen, is that in 1985, if there weren't regulations, I could have seen Manimal in widescreen 1080p. Is that what you're telling me?
You could have looked at Magnum PI's luxurious mustache in high definition.
I've been robbed.
Every follicle.
There were so many scan lines I had to look at. It was bad. All right. You know what time it is, don't you? Time for this.
America scores and wins.
It's time for the pop quiz. Everyone's favorite part of the show. At least that's what we hear. That's the feedback we're getting. And this is a chance for you guys to be asked some trivia questions. We do it rapid fire style. Tom scores it in the weirdest way possible and helps you out.
I'm going to bring the rule book to Nerdtacular and
please,
show you.
I'll even look. I'll read the whole thing. I don't mind. I just haven't seen it, so I don't know what's going on over there. There's something going on. If you hear this sound, it means you got the answer correctly. If you hear this, that's incorrect. And we're starting today with Steven.
I'm going to hear the buzzer sound a lot on that.
That's what people say, but you'll probably be fine. So here you go, Steven. Here are your questions, and they are all DC Comics related.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of your wheelhouse. So
probably all New 52 related.
Probably, and that's not really the thing you love so much.
Nope.
So let's give it a shot. Here we go.
Let's do it.
First question. How did Bouncing Boy get his powers?
He drank the formula by accident.
You are correct. Nicely done. Let's see. Next question. What chemical is Bane addicted to?
Venom.
Oh, Nicely done.
That's a Marvel reference.
Yeah, kind of is, isn't it? Extra point? No? Your scoring's not that weird? All right. Number next.
I was waiting to judge his reaction.
All right. All right. What is Hal Jordan's Air Force call sign?
No idea.
That would be...
Goose? Is it Goose?
Incorrect. Highball. Oh. Highball.
I'm going to give him a point because he really had no idea. It's a correct answer.
See? You explain it to me. All right. Next up. What is the real name of Hush? I love that book. One of my favorites.
Falcone? No, that's not it. Sorry.
Thomas Elliot. Thomas Elliot is the correct answer.
I'm taking a point off because you said sorry. I don't really think
he was really very sorry. Who is the holiday killer in The Long Halloween? There's two possibilities, by the way. So you can get one.
I'm going with the younger Falcone kid.
Oh, Alberto Falcone. Is that what you'd say? Well, you got it right. Yeah. Nicely done.
Also left fielder for the Cardinals in 1970s.
Really? Oh, wow. The other one is Gilda Dent, by the way, is the other one.
Right.
Crypto the Superdog had a secret identity and living with Kent's what is his secret identity? What? He has this
what
written
is
wrong.
Crypto's secret identity.
What is his secret identity is the question.
Is that Fido?
You are incorrect. Skip is the actual answer. Skip. Fido is wrong. What story arc in JLA, that's the Justice League of America, has Batman's list of the JLA members' weaknesses stolen by Ra's al Ghul?
Is that Tower of Babel?
You are correct, sir. Nicely done. Finally, last question. What miniseries was the lead into the New 52 in the fall of 2011?
Countdown.
You are incorrect. No. It is Flashpoint.
Sorry.
Flashpoint. All right, there you go.
Flash dance.
Tom's going to start calculating. What a feeling. But before we do, we got Daryl up. Daryl, you ready for your questions?
Oh, wow. I'm glad I didn't get that set of questions.
Guess what these are related to? Just a guess.
Salamanders?
It is not what they're related to. They are related to classic animation.
Wait, did we start?
That's not a point. No, you don't get that. This is classic animation, Daryl. I know you're a huge fan. So here you go. We decided not to do Star Trek, which is kind of fun. Here we go. Tweety and Sylvester lived with a character called Granny. What is Granny's real name?
Oh. I like old animation, but I don't know trivia facts or anything like that. What is her name?
Well, this would be fun.
I don't know. Granny Smith.
Emma Webster is the correct answer. The other one was an apple. Tom, any points for the apple for the fruit reference? No?
Yeah, I think so. I think it gets a half point for that.
All right. The scoring's so weird, I think I actually just helped get you a point. All right, next up.
See, you do understand how it works.
I guess I do. In what year did Tom and Jerry begin airing?
I'm going to guess 1936.
1940. No S's in there.
Shoot.
No S's. Who voiced Wile E. Coyote from 1949 to 1952?
Nobody. You never said anything.
You are absolutely correct. Nicely done.
Nicely done. Good.
He was a silent character the entire time. Next up. That's a really good answer, by the way. The Kill the Wabbit short of Bugs Bunny is one of the most iconic Looney Tunes shorts of all time. What is the actual name of this short? It's the whole kill the wabbit, that one. Chuck Jones was the director.
The name of the short. I have no idea. How about Kill the Wabbit?
What's up, Doc? Or what's opera, Doc? Sorry.
0.25, because it really should be called Kill.
Seriously. Great. Next up, what is the name of Woody Woodpecker's penguin friend?
Oh, it's Swilly.
Swilly?
Willy, not Swilly.
Chilly Willy is correct. We'll give you that.
Swilly is just when he's drunk.
Yeah, he's when he's having a rough weekend. All right. Final
point off for slurring. Sorry.
What cigarette company has a sponsor or was a sponsor of the Flintstones?
Oh,
Hey, Bonnie. I remember this.
Oh, shoot. I wish I could remember it. Is it Winston?
You are correct. Winston Cigarettes. Nicely done.
Nicely done.
What classic cartoon tells a story with everything on screen being a visual literation or literal translation of a modern day expression?
What?
I'm going to sneeze. Hold on. Sneeze button. Okay, I'm not going to sneeze now.
That is nothing to sneeze at.
What classic, sorry, what classic cartoon tells a story with everything on screen being a visual literal translation of a modern day expression?
What a question. I'm going to say, I don't even understand the question. So I'm going to say Scott Johnson's Crash cartoon from 2004.
Incorrect. It is Symphony in Slang.
You would have got a full point if you'd stopped at I don't understand the question, because that was correct. But since you tried to answer, you only get a half point.
Oh, my Lord. All right, final question. What episode of Star Trek, the animated series, features Sulu saying, "What am I doing here? What is all this equipment?"
Oh, I got that right here.
What am I doing here? What is all this equipment?
Yep, you do have that.
But I have no idea where it came from.
Oh,
it's stopping there.
The counter clock incident is the correct answer.
Okay.
All right, Tom, add them up. How'd they do? Who won?
This was a tight one, Scott. If Daryl would have gotten that last answer correct, it would have put him over the top. But as it was, he finished with 3.75 points to Steven's 4.
Oh, look at that, everybody. Still fun to play. Oh, yeah. Always a good time. Congratulations to the both of you for withstanding the strangest scoring technique in the history of the world.
I like it. We need to bring him in for the TMS Stump a Trek Nerd stuff.
Just change that. I would really shake things up, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into this right now.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This segment is called Forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. And it's where we get to talk about weird predictions or predictions about the future, technology, where we're going to be, science fiction, whatever. And there's a couple of them here. I'm going to just touch on my idea, and then I want to get to Steven's. Mine was, we'll soon be activating our cars by voice recognition. The tech is finally kind of getting there. You'll sit down in your car. In fact, you'll probably, on the outside of the car, say, well, they already have good fingerprinty stuff, so maybe that's fingerprint. But even if it's not, you just say, car, open. Whoop, opens up. Sit down. Start. Brrr, car starts up. And if it isn't you saying it and your voice signature isn't correct, not going to start. The new. And so the only way for someone to break into your car would be.
Lost your keys? No, lost my voice.
Lost my voice. Oh, I didn't think about that. That's bad.
What about if you're drunk?
Yeah, see, there's issues. But that's good, because maybe the fart would know. The car would know that you're drunk and it would not let you drive. That's good. But it would be, I want it to be intelligent enough to go, I'm sorry, you're inebriated and unable to drive. Please blow into this thing and I'll check your alcohol level, and then it'll compare it against what state you're in, and it'll be smart enough to know that you're traveling and you're in Oregon and that's their limit, and like all that stuff is going to come, dude. I'm telling you, that stuff's coming. Any dissenters? Anybody not agree?
Well, you could reprogram the chips to say that you're in Russia or something, then it'll start.
Well, everything's hackable, right? So, oh, because they drink all the time. I get it. It just occurred to me what you mean. You would hack the thing to let you drink and drive. I got it. But for me, it would be like, you know, to hijack it, Tom would have to be getting into his car. And I would have to run up. I'm the hijacker. And I would grab you around the neck and I would jam you into the car and I would sit next to you and I'd say, all right, buddy, say start. That's how I would steal your car. You would have to say something for me.
It's no different than a key in that case where somebody runs up and goes, start your car. Holds a gun to your head. You're going to drive.
But what if he said instead, give me your keys and then you can leave? See, that'd be all right, right? You'd rather leave than.
They don't do that, though.
They don't?
They either hotwire it. I've seen movies, Scott. Either hotwire it or they hold a gun to your head while you're driving.
Oh, yeah. Gone in 60 Seconds is like a manual on how to do that.
What are these movies you speak of?
I'll tell you later.
The cool thing about the voice recognition is if you can throw it in with Cortana, and then you throw in the Defense Department is doing with the automated driving.
Mm. You know, the DARPA thing.
Siri, take me home.
Right.
And she drives you into the lake.
I think the voice recognition comes along about the same time we get the self-driving cars.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's funny because Steven's not wrong here. There's these little inconveniences that come with the current iteration of this stuff. And if those hold true when we're doing advanced things like that, it will drive you into the wrong place or whatever. I don't look
forward to that. Take me home. Taking you to Nome.
No, not Nome. And before you know it, you're in Alaska and you're drinking. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about this. Steven, you say Disney one day, soon or far off. We'll get to the business here, but you say Marvel's going to buy all their good properties back.
Yeah, I think Disney, in looking at what they can possibly do, and this kind of came out from yesterday's discussion on Comic Dorks, I was thinking, well, why can't Disney just, they're making billions upon billions right now with the Avengers and all their movie properties. Why can't they make billions more by going ahead and forking over another $4 billion to Sony or another $4 billion to a 20th Century and buy their properties back and start doing the movies, keeping it all in-house? There's kind of a somewhat of a precedent for this because other comic book publishers used to publish Disney comics. Mm. But after the acquisition of Marvel, Disney pulled all those back and are now publishing them through Marvel. Star Wars is this way. And the Disney imprint that Boom Studios was doing is this way now, too. Mm. So it wouldn't surprise me if they just say, OK, we've had enough. Let's bring it in-house. And here's your $4 billion each. And we'll make $16 billion on the back end.
And they could have that money. I mean, it's very conceivable that they would earn enough from all these movies, just enough to justify that.
Yep. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
They don't need to buy them back. They still own them. Marvel still owns all those properties. They licensed them to Sony. And so they'd have to get Sony to agree to take some amount of money to cancel the contract.
Right, exactly.
What's going on is Sony's like, no, dude, we've got a contract. And we are going to keep that contract because if we give it back to you, we lose. I don't know that there is an amount of money that makes that worthwhile for both sides.
There's probably some money. This almost happened with the Daredevil property. Or it did happen with the Daredevil property because they couldn't get that other movie in production at times. And so it reverted back to the studio. And that's why they're doing that Netflix series. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're going to try to get, you know, stop the licensing, if that's a better term for it.
Yeah, eventually the licensing will run out and a contract will be up for renewal. And Disney will say, I agree with you there. Disney will say, no.
They're just going to bring it all back in-house.
Well, because at some point they do have to agree to do it again. Right.
And I don't know when the Spider-Man franchise contract runs out, but I want to say it's
2016.
Yeah, it's going to be by 2020.
Well, we always talk about Sony having Spider-Man. We talk about Fox having X-Men and Fantastic Four. Are there others that we aren't thinking of that just don't come up or someone's not exercising the right to make something?
New Line Cinema mm-hmm. had Blade.
Yeah.
And that was with Marvel Entertainment going in on that.
Yeah.
I don't know where Blade resides now.
Yeah, I'm curious about that
one. What the thing is, like with something like Daredevil, the potential for earnings is not high enough for the studios to fight over it that much. Because if Marvel's like, you know what, we really want this stuff back, that kind of property is going to go back. So I would imagine it's really, if it's not already, it's really only Spider-Man and X-Men that are staying out there and maybe Fantastic Four. Because those are the ones there that the studios that have the license right now go, that is too valuable to give up easily.
Yeah, they are top tier. But in the meantime, Marvel and Disney are back there making an argument for B characters becoming A-list. I mean, they're taking their entire allotment of all this amazing movies, the Captain America movies, the Avengers, all this stuff. This was all second tier business back in the day. These were never their top tier stuff. This was not top shelf. That was always X-Men. That was always Spider-Man. It was never Iron Man ever. But that's all flipped now. So in a really weird way, they have accomplished this crazy thing, which is we took some of our crappy characters, or not crappy, but just lesser known or whatever, and we turned them into just the biggest money-making machines of all time, critically acclaimed, fan acclaimed. And now it's almost making our other stuff, which were our top shelf stuff, look kind of bad. Partially because they're not doing them, but also it's just, what is Fox going to do? So if I were Fox or whoever has Daredevil, I'd be like, maybe we should hang on to Daredevil, because if they get it back, they're just going to make an amazing one out of it. Well, we should be those guys.
And that's the problem. That's why they were trying to rush that into production, because if they didn't have something in production by X date, and this was like last year, 2 years ago, then the license reverts back. The property reverts back to the holder, and that's what they were banking on. But you know, maybe it would be a good thing for Disney to get back a hold of Ghost Rider.
I would like to see a proper Ghost Rider movie. I liked it growing up.
And it's one thing to say I've got a successful property, I'm Fox, and I'm paying Disney money to hold on to it, but I'm making this much money back, so it's worth it. It's another thing to go, yeah, we could invest a lot of time and energy in building this up, but then we still don't own it.
And eventually, right, sometime, it's going to go back to them. And they're making money off of our success.
Yeah, regardless.
It's better to own everything yourself and build it up. So mm-hmm. if I'm Fox, I'm not going to spend a bunch of money on a minor character for Marvel because that's just helping Disney at that point. I'm going to figure out what I do own entirely.
Who has mm-hmm. who has Punisher, Steven, right now? Do we know?
I don't know. Hmm. I can find it, though.
Because right, they're not doing jack with that right now.
They've tried a couple of times.
They tried and they were terrible attempts, but given the right hands on the project, that could be some seriously awesome stuff and a darker turn. And, you know,
as of 2004, it was Artisan Entertainment.
Okay.
And Columbia. So,
all right.
Oh, but again, production company. Sorry, Lionsgate.
Steven's prediction is totally to the point, which is Disney's going to try to get back, going to keep and try to get back as much of this stuff as possible.
Yeah.
Because it makes more sense to them. They can unify it. And I think a lot of other studios are not really going to fight that.
Daryl.
Unless it's something already making tons of cash like X-Men.
Daryl. Right. Now, the only drawback to that yeah. would be, you know, that the cost, the effort, the risk is all put into Sony's hands with Amazing Spider-Man or Fox with the X-Men. And Disney just has to take the money regardless. So they may just say, well, you know, you guys go ahead and continue to do what you're doing. You assume the risk. We'll take the reward.
Right. They get paid either way.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's such a weird world we're in now. Just jump back 10 years, dude. Just think about this. Nobody knew Marvel was going to do what they ended up doing. Who's the guy in charge? Who's the creative dude?
Kevin Feige.
I hope he's making more money than he can ever spend. I mean, that guy's, he's amazing. He's the superhero here. He's the yeah. Stan Lee of our day. Ooh, that's right.
He's the superhero.
Daryl, parting shots. Anything about this comic prediction you'd like to say?
I like everything that Marvel is touching. It's just amazing stuff. And I don't want anybody else to make any other superhero movie ever again.
Wow, that's pretty harsh. I want DC to step up to the plate and get going. That's what I want.
Well, I want them to, if anybody else makes something, I want them to do as good a job as Marvel's doing.
Well, ooh, Nth Mike sent a good link. I'll throw it in the doc for show notes. It has all of the properties
and who owns them.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I will put that in the notes.
Daryl, you don't want to see another Spawn movie?
I don't think I saw the original.
It's not good.
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, that was that clown thing.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want that.
It's not good at all. I'm not even sure the comic. This is one case where I'd actually argue the comic book is really probably not a great source for a movie anyway. I really don't think it was ever any good as a movie or wouldn't have been anyway. I mean, somebody could do it some justice, I guess, but that wasn't it. Ooh, rough.
It was in the man thing.
CGI cape for the time. It was kind of cool, but other than that.
I love my giant size man thing.
Yeah.
And soundboard.
All right. We got a quick email here that we got in from Lisa. This actually went to Tom. I'll go ahead and read it. She is Leole on Twitter and wrote in. She says, Tom.
Leloi.
What did I say?
Leloi.
I do this all the time. I may as well have said potato chicken because that's just as close as I got it.
Lisa
anyway.
Made the logo that we use for It's a Thing.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I know. Yeah, that one's really good. Well, hello there, Lisa. It's nice to meet you. Tom says, or she says to you, Tom, so a couple of weeks ago, I tweeted you and Molly for It's a Thing, and I think it would be cool if Apple's version of a smartwatch is a pocket watch. Interesting. And pocket watches become a trend. I want to expand on that idea. I want to send this email to Current Geek, but I can't remember what the email is. All right. Well, I didn't have to read that part. I think it would be great if the product itself was just the watch face. And had some kind of attachment on the back so you could either put it on a band or wear it like a watch or whatever, put it on a chain around your neck, or even wear it like a necklace pendant, or even attach a
carabiner.
Carabiner, thank you. Pirates of the Carabiner, I've seen that.
Yes.
So you can hook it onto your bag or whatever. So it's one. So that cracked me up for no reason. So it's one product that can be worn multiple ways. This way, the watch face can be one size and it fits everyone. I have a really tiny wrist, so the Pebble watch, for example, looks crazy big on me. And actually, I would argue that Pebble looks big on everyone, if I'm going to be asked at gunpoint. And third parties can go nuts making accessories to go with it. Of course, I want to make the smartwatch to have full phone functionality, so I have the option of leaving my phone at home.
At that point, isn't it just a small phone?
Yeah. I mean, if you want all that fun, you're never going to get all that functionality. I mean, if you want to be able to make calls, though, I guess, that doesn't seem too hard, you know.
Can I get one I can wear around my neck like an 80s rap star?
Yeah, of course. Big gold chain.
Shirt down to the navel.
Tom DMC, you could call yourself.
wasn't the iPod Nano? I mean, couldn't you just take the iPod Nano shape and do that with what she's talking about?
Yeah.
Because my wife had one at one point, and we just got her, the watch wristband, and she wore it around as a watch for a long time.
So there you go. You just need to add the phone.
If you want to add the phone functionality, that's what you would need.
Yeah.
Well, I just looked up myrapname.com, which has nothing to do with this call, but it makes a rap name for people. So, Tom, your rapper name is Fat T Tommy Gunshot Blade.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Steven, how did it know?
Steven Schleicher is Step Hen, a.k.a. Lucid Jam.
There you go.
All right. And then Daryl. Hold on. Daryl Skills. There we go. Your rapper name is DS Doom, a.k.a. Teflon Juice.
Hell yeah.
All right. That's fantastic. I didn't even look at me. Let's just check real quick. SJ. All right. Mine.
DS Doom.
Mad Scotty S Hoodie Piles. So, anyway,
S Hoodie Piles.
I'm with her though on what I like about her email isn't so much that we're down to specific things like it hangs out of your pocket or sticks to your shirt. I'm more liking her desire to break the notion that this thing needs to be a traditional watch,
right?
Mm-hmm. That we can't figure out a better wearable or a different kind of way of looking at it. I think that kind of thinking is crucial. So.
Yeah,
into
I
that.
Like the idea you can do anything with it you want.
Yeah, right. Just hang it, put it, stick it, whatever you want to do. Ended. Yeah, I'm doing like a what's their name video. What's the name of that
Black
band?
Eyed Peas.
Yeah,
Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, not the black. No, the other one. And the stick it, poke it, have it, lift it. What's the name of the band?
Play-Doh.
No, the guys the Up All Night to Get Lucky guys.
Oh,
freaking
Daft Punk.
Yeah, Daft Punk. It took too long for me to get there, so now I don't even remember why I said it. Hey, that's it. That's done. Oh, by the way, if you want to send your emails in, currentgeek@gmail.com, that's our email address. But we're done. The show's out. But we always give our guests a chance to talk about cool stuff they're up to so that you, fine listener, can follow them into whatever hole they're digging. Daryl, let's start with you. Where can people go to learn more about Daryl?
Well, they can find me every morning. Well, not every morning, but Monday through Thursday on the morning stream, answering that tough trivia question you always throw at me.
Yeah, it's fun.
And also on This Week in Trek, every Tuesday that usually comes out. And then Grumpy Cast is every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's just two older dudes being grumpy, right?
Well, pretty much. Yeah, we take our problems and barf them into a big barf bag and throw them in the garbage.
Good. That sounds like the internet to me, so... do check those out. He is the Trek Nerd on Twitter. And how about you, Steven? What's going on in your world? Always a million things.
Always a million things. But if people want to find out more about comic books and pop culture, they can head over to majorspoilers.com. We also have a number of podcasts that people want to check out. Movies, comic books, and of course, Dungeons & Dragons with our Critical Hit podcast that you can find there on the Frog Pants Network.
Yep. And Steven will be at Nerdtacular doing all kinds of cool stuff with a track. And also, I'm really stoked about what you announced yesterday about doing a kind of a comic.
Comic collecting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That whole idea is really fascinating to me. And I'm working really hard to be not doing anything else while that panel's on because I want to watch it. Anyway, that's all coming up. Tom, how about you and me? Anything? You got anything? What's going on?
Well, I wanted to mention the FSL Tonight Kickstarter. FSL Tonight is Justin Robert Young and myself covering the sports world of the FSL. There are teams like the San Francisco Federation.
Yeah.
Corridor Crows are a past champion. This year we've got the Scarrow Exterminators and the Cylon Raiders joining the league. So if you'd like to hear more about this, go check out fsltonight.com. And if you really want to hear us do coverage of the 2014 season, please back our Kickstarter. We're about 40% backed, about 33% into the month. So we're not doing bad. Yeah. But,
it's not bad. Let's trend it up, though. It's a perfect.
Use the help.
It's a great companion to this show, I think. What you guys do on there is very current geeky, for sure. There's a million other things happening. I won't list them all. But if you want to follow us on Twitter, Tom is at Ace Detect. I'm at Scott Johnson. And you can find more stuff happening and going on over there on currentgeek.com. We'll have shinks. We'll have links to the show that we talked about today.
Oh, we're going to have shinks.
We'll have some shinks. Okay. Well, crap. Yeah. I was unaware. And a whole bunch of stuff like that. Frogpants.com is also a place Schleicher. You can go and hang out. Yeah, the Schleichers, Schlinks.
I heard that once in the 80s.
CurrentGeek.com, CurrentGeek at gmail.com, CurrentGeek.reddit.com, and CurrentGeek on Twitter. It's going to do it for us. See you next, guys. See you next, guys. See you next week for a brand new show, guys. Bye now.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. The topic this week is whether a new Apple patent application is the first step in making texting while driving legal again in most jurisdictions. One of the more interesting Apple-owned patent applications published this week at the U.S. Patent Office. The invention is entitled Transparent Texting, the idea basically boiling down to using the rear-facing camera to stream through an image of what is in front of the user as a background to text bubbles. Thus, someone walking and texting, or even hypothetically, driving and texting, can continue to see in front of them while focusing on the phone screen. This application could have far-reaching legal consequences. For example, if the problem with distracted driving is lost focus on the road, this application could solve that problem by keeping the focus on the message bubbles and the underlying background of the road. Imagine if text bubbles could show up on your windshield, as the windshield brings you a high-definition look of what cameras outside the car see in front of you. Would it still be distracted driving then? Sadly, the only way to know is if local lawmakers allow people to try out such new freedoms. At least until car safety technology moves beyond automatic emergency brakes to more automated vehicle control, it is unlikely that this, or Google Glass, or anything of the ilk will make texting while driving legal. The bottom line is, someday technology will help us overcome human focus problems, but until then, patents like this are just mere conveniences for pedestrians. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hello, and welcome to This Week in Comics. I'm Aaron Steinberg, and each week I'll be taking you through the good, the bad, the ugly, the new, and the noteworthy in the world of comics. As a warning, my reviews may contain spoilers, so if you plan on reading whatever my pick of the week is and don't want to be spoiled, you should probably wait to listen to the segment until after you've read the book. Anyways, my pick of the week this week is a collected edition. It's Volume 1 of Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. Sex Criminals is an amazingly funny and entertaining look at the lives of a man and a woman that find out that when they have sex, they can stop time. And what do they do when they find out? What any other person that can stop time by doing it would do? They rob banks, of course! With extremely zippy dialogue and a modest and fun art style, Sex Criminals reels you into the personal lives of the main characters, John and Susie, and instantly creates a connection that doesn't let go. If you're not easily offended, you should read this book. However, as the name implies, there is some nudity and a good chunk of profanity, but nothing too graphic. And when the nudity and profanity come out, it feels like it's in service to the story. It doesn't feel hollow, as if it's there just for the shock value. Well, that's it for this week, but if you want more comic-y goodness, you can check me out on the web at www.epiccomicshow.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Epic Comic Show. Until next time, I'm Aaron Steinberg.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.